Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Monday, September 19th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we already have our first guest who always opens the broadcast on Monday mornings, John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm feeling good, not sick. Another sunny day in the unending sunny week, and the sun is about the only really good thing you can say today, right?
Well, that's very true. So thank goodness it rises every day. Even when it's cloudy, we know it's there. It's a consistency that we don't have in our media. But you're quite consistent, and that's really what's most important. You've been reporting about the COVID crisis, and yet at the same time, the governor's not reporting it. On the federal level, we're not getting reporting either. What's going on here? Are they just trying to avoid it because it's bad news?
I think they simply want to put it behind us. Okay. This is the mantra that has been voiced by Westchester County for the last 6 months. And and we do not get the real true picture because they're afraid of keeping people out of the stores and out of restaurants and out of schools. They don't want that. They want the schools to open, which they have, and most of them in what was commonly be described as the wide open atmosphere pre-pandemic. And I think that that is a mistake, but we shall see, because the numbers the first 2 weeks of school don't look, because they're up.
No, they don't.
Not in the schools. Not in the schools. But I mean,
well, that's
they're
where,
up,
but
period,
isn't that
in
the where
county.
The incubator is? Isn't that where a lot of the stuff gets incubated and it gets taken home and it gets brought back to school again with teachers and other kids? That's the process,
this is exactly, that's exactly the prospect. And last week through Friday, in a very underreported week, we didn't get figures for midweek until Saturday, and we still, and today we await the Saturday figures. And what has happened is we are on track for about 1,525 infections the last week, up from 1,026 last week. That's a 50% increase in a week in new cases.
Have we yet figured out what causes the rise and the falls of the numbers? What is it that's causing more people to get infected? What is it when the numbers go down? Or is it just the reporting that is off? I don't know myself.
This is exactly it. How can you have a 50% increase in a week? It's hard to believe it, it started out on Sunday with 165, then it went to 240 on Monday, and 231 on Tuesday, 214 on Wednesday, 244 on Thursday, and 210 on Friday, and that's not good, and that's adding up to the 1,524, depending on what Saturday's numbers are. And then the percentage of infection in Westchester County is rocking around 7%, and that's not good. It's not the containing number you want. You want the one person infecting less than one, which is we were very close to, and now we've gone back uphill. And next week,
I gotta ask you then, what it boils down to is, like, what was it, about 2 weeks ago, where the county executive said you don't need to wear a mask when you get on the bus.
Right.
What's the rationale for all of this? Just, is that to make us feel good, as if things are resolved, but they're not resolved, the numbers prove it differently? And then why does the state and even the local government, why don't they give us the numbers on a consistent basis? They don't, what, have they got anything else better to do? Can't they give
there
it to us
absolutely
every day
no
or
reason.
Every other day? Whatever, yeah, but be consistent. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, I was really shocked when I didn't get
good?
Any figures for 3 days last week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, what was the problem? We did not have a three-day weekend last week. There was no reason for holding back on regular routine of reporting, but they did, which makes me think that they did it deliberately to prevent people from seeing the rise. I asked them about that, and the press office of the governor never responded back to me.
I see.
They never do. They never do.
No,
and
they never do.
Whenever a rational question is asked, they don't respond to it. And
I guess they have
I felt it behooved them to come up with some sort of lie that would say, listen, what happened was there was a delay in reporting and all that, and we'll be back to normal next week. That's what they should have said, but they don't even have the brains in the press office to do that.
Well, that's because they know they're not going to do it anyway, even if they would say so. So that's really what it boils down to.
I think this was an effort to stop the count myself.
Yeah, I think you're right. Are we lying to the public because we're not telling them about the COVID issue? We're not telling them about the monkeypox thing. We're not telling them about other issues that come up that impact our health and our welfare. Why are we not being told the entire picture? Is this the way they're going to try to protect us? That's the way it seems. I don't know what the rationale
is. It
is
not protecting us.
Not at all.
The one thing about
polio?
Governor Cuomo.
What about polio? Yeah.
One thing about Governor Cuomo, he was honest. He told what he said, what it was, even when it was bleak. And that's why Governor Cuomo was able to convince people to behave right. And he stopped the first wave. And since then, the persons in charge of the government haven't been able to do that.
Exactly. And what about polio? We're not really hearing that much about it, as if we wanted to cover it up. I mean, polio has been known to be in our wastewater, been recognized there, and now all of a sudden these bozos figured out, well, hey, if we look into the wastewater, we might find a lot of other pathogens that are really derogatory to us. What's taken us so long? It's like 20 years of not doing the right thinking. I don't get it. Or is this all part of, let's make everybody feel good by not telling them the truth?
It raises the question of what are the schools doing? Are they allowing persons without vaccines, vaccination of polio, the young ones, into the schools? That's been going on for a number of years. This is a far more looming question, and now, and of course they'll deny it. Oh, we don't. But this is what White Plains said was: if you don't have a polio vaccine by the 20th, and proof of it, that the 20th is tomorrow, you cannot send your child to school. And we'll see how that works.
Well, as long as if they maintain that demeanor and make sure that nobody who has not been inoculated is able to enter into the school, I don't know what mechanism they've created for that, but let's assume that they have, and the school will be responsible for that. and maybe if the numbers increase, that the school will be recognized for not doing what they need to do to weed out these people who haven't been inoculated and don't have the proof, then we might get somewhere here.
I mean, quite frankly, I don't see how this suddenly develops this year. If they haven't been ignoring this for the last few years. Yeah.
Exactly.
For a long time.
I think it's just to placate people and make believe that we're doing, that something is being done, when in reality it's not. I don't understand why we're trying to fool the public.
That's what government does when you have incompetence running certain departments and they are unwilling to make people unhappy at requirements. We have a good example of what happens when you make people unhappy, and that was January 6th. And they don't want to do that.
Well, I'm missing what happened January 6th. I'm losing it.
Well, that was the insurrection.
Oh, yes, right. Absolutely.
That's right. And so, therefore, that was parlayed by forces promoted the false election theory.
A false story.
And that was allowed to stand.
Got to ask you then, are we getting to the point where we're deceiving the public, whether it be the New York Times or other places, and yet they couch it as if they're giving us the news when they're leaving so much out? It's unbelievable.
Well, they're leaving out a good part of what we need to know. Let's put it that way. Because
I think that that's appropriately said.
But what can I say? I mean, the reports that keep coming out always give us a new thing to worry about, don't they? It's amazing. You see a new thing to worry about every day. But then once they've reported on the thing to worry about, they don't follow up on it. It's as if we're just trying to move papers.
Well, that's evidently the case. It's very frightening.
Like, why the New York Times does not print what I do, a day-by-day record of what the new infections are, a day-by-day record of where the infections are, why they don't do that in a graph instead of doing those stupid color-coded graphs of the country, which don't tell you anything. You know, I just don't think that is the way to do it. They should have one of that for New York City. I mean, the county at least does that in map fashion, but they don't refer to that either. I refer to it because it gives a good indication of where the infections are around the Mid-Hudson region. And last week, they were going up in Orange and Rockland County. Hitting 100 new cases a day, once for Orange and once for Rockland, which is suspicious because those have been really low. And now, and Dutchess was up slightly. So it was spreading around the other six counties other than Westchester. And Westchester has been consistent, kicking in with over a couple of hundred infections or close to it for a couple of weeks now, even though Westchester was down for six straight weeks. And now we're up 50% in a week.
Well, I guess big media thinks that it's important for us to know what's going on in Wisconsin, as if that's going to impact our behavior pattern, rather than knowing what's happening in the neighborhood, which means the entire Westchester County in New York City, because that all affects us. So it doesn't look like we're going to change the demeanor of much of media. Do you know? I mean, I personally don't know myself. and maybe you do, or maybe not, does the public find media credible anymore, especially when it comes to the pandemic?
Well, I certainly seem to be. When you have persons in leadership claim that COVID is behind us and it's just going to be part of our lives, that is them endorsing bad behavior.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's an endorsement of, I was at an event yesterday. I was the only about 30 people. I was the only one wearing a mask, as was my wife.
Really?
And I do it because I don't know if I'm carrying the disease, having breathed it in, but I'm, since I'm vaccinated, you know, I haven't gotten it. So, and that is the big point here. You can have the disease, but since you're vaccinated, you can have the disease germs in your mouth and breathe that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is something that has been said for 2.5 years now, but people don't get that.
No, they don't.
And I see big crowds, no masking, I see. And, you know, I just think it's a poor behavior. And I just don't know.
They won't learn the lesson until they get infected, at which point it may be too late.
And this is explained by the authorities as saying, well, you don't get as sick.
I don't think
you want to get sick at all with this disease. I had a friend.
I would think not.
That,
I would think
I
not.
Had a friend got sick. I had a friend got sick. It lasted about a week, but he was wiped out. He was wiped out. He's very tired. And now he's back.
I wouldn't
back.
Be surprised.
And that's okay. But that is just the way it is. Now, I definitely am going to get this new booster shot that is being offered. I've already signed up for it simply because it's a smart thing to do.
I'm going to get the same thing. I'm waiting for the Moderna because that's what I got started on.
Right.
I know they say that if you get the Pfizer one and you had Moderna initially, it's supposed to be effective anyway. But I'm not gonna listen to this all this stuff because then if that's the case, then what's the point of Moderna coming up with another inoculation? If it's already been done, I don't get it. It's so confusing. It's getting pathetic. Can we trust the government to follow through with their protocol? Even Fauci is being questioned at this point. I found him equivocating for many months. I couldn't figure out what was what. It's like he didn't know to stroke us and make us feel good or to tell us the truth. And I just got so confused. It was pathetic. I stopped listening. Just looked at our own figures to see where things were.
Well, the CDC has changed the rules, it seems like, every week. And that's what it seems like to me anyway. And
me too.
You have to stay on message. That was the important thing that Governor Cuomo did. He did not waver in his original highly invasive suggestions. And the only organizations that did not follow his suggestions were local governments. They didn't enforce fines for non-masking. They did not issue misdemeanors. They did not. They didn't do anything that would make the people mad to enforce what the governor requested people do. And I felt that was representative of a lack of will on the part of local governments.
Mm-hmm.
lack of will.
Wanted to ask you about other things too. The polio vaccine is also lagging in the metropolitan area. And why is that among children?
Well, that goes to the heart of what I asked earlier. Our schools have been ignoring these for years.
I guess
because
so.
How can you have a 20% lack of polio vaccinations in Nassau County? That's a huge county, half a million people. How can you have a 40% unvaccinated with polio in, Rockland and Orange? This is absolutely ridiculous. Well, of course, Orange County is ridiculous because they have a school district there that refuses to vaccinate because of their religious beliefs. And they run their own school district there. So that's part of the problem. But still, 40% of persons unvaccinated for polio means that if polio starts going, you're going to have a lot of people crippled. It's uncurable. Uncurable
is uncurable. It's very, very big. I don't know if a society can tolerate this sort of religious standard that should be even permitted.
Yeah.
I don't want to get infected with polio. I was inoculated when I was young, and I didn't get it. My cousin though, she did. She wore a brace for in one leg, I don't know for how many years, she overcame that. But years and years and years later, I'm talking 30 years later. So. I don't know why this is permitted. You know, it's one thing not to get an inoculation for a flu shot, maybe, because, to be honest, I really don't know. I really don't know. I don't understand why, if the good Lord wanted you to be aware that there was a flu shot, then the human beings were able to concoct it and put it together and it works, why wouldn't you take it? Isn't that a divine, effort by the good Lord to tell people how to get it done? I mean, it doesn't come from nothing.
Yeah. Absolutely. The flu is a very tough disease.
Yeah.
I've gotten a flu shot ever since I first got it. I never used to get
flu,
but I've been getting it now. I've been getting a shot now because I didn't want to get it again. It really whacks you out for 7 days. And
I got my flu shot. And what else did I get?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. What's it called? I forgot. I'm not sure. Another thing where I got one inoculation, but I needed to get a second one.
Shingles.
I forgot. Shingles. That's right. Shingrix. That's what I got. I got my second Shingrix shot.
Right.
I got that on Friday as well.
Yeah.
One in each arm. And that was fine.
Now, what is happening is, we no longer have our own personal doctors because we are going through the doctor industry to get our doctor coverage.
Right.
This is a problem. The doctors have a record of what you've gotten, but there isn't that follow-up of, well, you need this, you need that. And but occasionally there is, but you only get it once a year when you have that physical,
Right.
And as we grow older as adults, we are not paying that much attention. We were vaccinated when we were young, we're okay. But you have to have tetanus. You have to have that renewed. That's also incurable, tetanus. And very important stuff. But, I mean, basic stuff is, I think, it's handled by the nursing offices in the various schools in the county.
Yeah.
But how I have to think that when you have 40% unvaccinated for polio up in very populous counties of the school population, somebody is enforcing it and hasn't been enforced for a long time. But that's only supposition on my part. That's only supposition.
I hear you.
But
I hear you.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think they have to launch some sort of an investigation to get those numbers up and have a shot mobiles come on in, and on the spot, if they don't have the proof of vaccination, you vaccinate or give them the oral vaccine for polio. That's what you've got to do.
Unfortunately, John, I see that we've only got 4 minutes left. Any chance you can give us a synopsis on what is it now? I think I'm losing my mind. On Westchester Power.
Westchester Power. The update now is that they are going to resume their supply, the supposed green energy supply, in December, and it will probably be at a 15 cents per kilowatt hour rate, which is going to be the new green energy rate, and the basic rate will be about 13.5 cents per kilowatt hour, and the big joke is that the reason for this, according to Westchester Power, is that electrons are sold as all the same, whether they come from green energy, wind, solar, or water, or whether they come from fossil fuel power plants. So this means the whole idea of a clean energy rate that I'm buying as a customer, I don't know if it's clean or not.
No, it seems like it's just a ploy.
It's off the deal. It was a ploy. It was a ploy.
Yeah.
However, it does. The one thing the rate does do for you is it protects you from Con Ed kilowatt hour fluctuations depending on the demand.
Right.
However, this green energy rate has doubled that they've come up with. It's doubled. So there's a lot less. You really wonder what it's going to be. I'm not going to be a happy camper if I'm paying 15.5 cents and Con Ed is charging 10 and 11.
Absolutely not.
Am I? Right.
No,
I think this is something that has not been reported on too diligently by the energy press, and no politicians other than Paul Finer, and let's see, I think there was one other, have talked about it. And no elected official, from state senator to state assembly person to county executives, have talked about this. And I think it's shabby, because this is basically a monopoly and restraint of trade. The electrons are sold at the highest price available for the electron. So everybody does well. That's a monopoly and restraint of trade. And this is what was told me by Westchester Power when I interviewed them 2 weeks ago. Flat out that electricity is charged at the price for natural gas, which, as you know, is through the roof, and this is a crisis made by the NYISO, Independent Systems Operator, which sets the price. Why should they set price as at the top rate? That's so the
I don't know.
Market is stable. It's stable.
Well, we're going to have to go, John, unfortunately, because
right.
we have our next guest on. But thanks a million for everything, and kudos to you. Great reporting. Absolutely stupendous. Thank you. Anyway,
thank
we'll
you.
Speak to you later yeah. on in the week. Be well.
Good day.
Bye.
Take care.
You too, sir.
Be well.
Okay, let's bring in none other than Michael Edelman, who's on next. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Jose.
Well, a pleasure to speak to you because so much has been going on. I guess one of the things that's really quite interesting is President Biden said that Trump's handling of the documents are totally irresponsible. And does the nation recognize that, or are we still divided because of political
perspective? No, I think the nation has had it with Donald Trump. Polling now shows that Trump's unpopularity is sky high. His approval
uh-huh.
rate is in the low 30s. The more he carries on with these fits that he throws at these rallies, and the more he
yeah.
talks about, you know, being picked on, being the victim, and the more books that are written about what happened inside the Trump administration while he was president, as told to these authors by former members of the administration like Kelly, the chief of staff, and Tillerson and those, the more that comes out and the more these go on the Times bestseller list almost instantaneously, the more I think people understand what the danger is. Has been and would be if he were to run again.
Uh-huh. Wow. And what's happening
I mean, I've
as
got,
well with...
I've got 12 books. Cool. I've got 12 books in front of me that I've read.
Yeah.
Since 12 separate authors writing about Donald Trump or the Republican Party or the demise of democracy. 12 of them, right? And they just keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
Maggie Haberman's new book is out in a week. It's
wow.
called the Con Man.
Wow, that's a great title.
Yeah.
Amazing.
She's a wonderful reporter, by the way. She's terrific.
Absolutely.
She's been on this like white on rice.
Yes, yes, yes. Unbelievable. Well, got to ask you about some other things. What about DeSantis from Florida? He's evidently defending the migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard.
It's indefensible.
It seems
first
to be.
First of all, they weren't illegal. They were legal. That's first.
They were legal.
Because they were from
know.
Venezuela, and they were seeking refuge, escaping communism.
Uh-huh. Right.
These were not Mexicans trying to come over the border in Texas. These were Venezuelans who wound up in Florida, and DeSantis decided to use them as pawns and sent them to Martha's Vineyard. Now, the interesting thing is that Florida's got 27 million people. Now, they couldn't deal with these 1,500, you know, men, women, and children. But Martha's Vineyard, which has nobody, infrastructure, rolling out to help immediately. That's the difference between a DeSantis state and a state run by another Republican, Massachusetts.
Amazing. Literally amazing. Well, I want to ask you about a lot of things because there's so much going on. Yeshiva University, based in New York, in Manhattan, they're disputing allowing an LGBT group to be formed there as like a club. Should that be permitted?
No, it shouldn't be.
And
I mean, they shouldn't be allowed to stop it. They shouldn't. It's yeshiva, right?
Right. It's a yeshiva.
They should not be allowed to violate the rights of the students who have an absolute right to form clubs.
Mm-hmm.
For different purposes.
Right.
And I'm sure it'll wind up in court.
It probably will. I went to yeshiva myself, But I don't understand. And there are gay people who also attend Yeshiva University,
yeah.
And so I don't understand why they would make a big issue out of it.
Well, I don't either. What did they say?
They basically say this is not something that they condone, that behavior.
Don't condone it.
Don't condone it. But that doesn't mean you can't have a club of people. You don't have to condone their behavior. But they want to get together.
Exactly.
So I don't quite see
it. You know,
it.
Hezzy, anytime you deal with radical religionists, whether it's Jews or Muslims or Christians, it doesn't make
yeah.
a difference. But once they come to the conclusion that God has told them how to behave morally, that's when you get a problem.
Yeah, it's true. That's very well said.
I don't know about you.
Very well
God
said.
Has not spoken to me recently.
You're kidding. Are you of all people?
Me of all people. You think he dropped me a line occasionally. But
I would have thought he
But
had
the
a
evangelical preachers, they have a direct line. Direct line.
Well, go figure. Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. Go
well,
figure.
Well, can I ask you, Puerto Rico, I called up somebody, mm-hmm. It was yesterday, because I know he has family in Puerto Rico. And I know that when he heard that Fiona was going to be barreling down into Puerto Rico, he probably flew down there because he's got relatives there. Instead, mm-hmm. he was diverted to the Dominican Republic. I guess they wouldn't let them land in Puerto Rico.
They couldn't land.
They wouldn't allow the landing. The question
is, yeah,
the
they can't land
is,
in a hurricane.
No, I guess they can't. So the question is, what is the responsibility of the United States with regard to Puerto Rico? Because it's a protectorate, isn't it? I don't know the exact
it's a territory.
Exact terminology.
We own it, and we have an obligation to help it because they're citizens of the United States.
Yes.
Anybody born in Puerto Rico is a citizen.
Yeah.
So?
Well, absolutely. So, but there seems to be an aversion.
No, there was an aversion. It was an aversion with Donald Trump.
Uh huh. All right. So maybe that's changing.
Because Donald Trump said Donald Trump doesn't like shithole countries. Remember that?
Uh huh. Yes, I remember
and
that.
And he views Puerto Rico as one of those, even though it's not on the continent of Africa. But because people from
mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico are Puerto Ricans, he's got a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
This administration doesn't have a problem with it.
No. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But the news is just like endless. It doesn't stop. what else I wanted to ask you. President Biden is focused on Americans being released from Afghanistan, and evidently there was an exchange there. Is he doing the right thing? It seems like he is, to exchange it rather than to make believe that nothing's happened. So he's contending with a lot of concerns, like, you know, allowing exchange of prisoners and stuff like that, which we never had before. With Trump. I mean, it seems civil rather than to keep them there for 20 years imprisoned.
Well, we have to, we should do everything we can to get our people home. So
I would think.
He's doing the same thing in Russia with the two people that were retained,
detained
yeah. illegally, the basketball player, Grimer and Whalen. But, you know, if the other side doesn't want a deal, there's not a lot you can do.
No, not at all. Well, one second. I want to look at some other things. Where is it?
How about the search?
I'm interested in what else you think is important.
Well, the special master. That was appointed by the
oh,
judge.
Yes,
that
that's
was
what I wanted to talk to you about. Yes.
The Trump appointee, this judge in Florida,
was appointed to the district court after Trump lost the election.
Right.
These were last-minute appointments. So she owes her job to Donald Trump, which is why she issued an anti-Trump investigation decision that has to be appealed because it's so terrible. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anybody defending that way that was written on either side of the aisle. Any attorney worth his salt knew that was garbage decision. And it was taking away from the executive branch the right to investigate itself.
Yeah.
Because the DOJ is in the executive branch. And these papers belonged to the executive branch.
Right.
And they were looking at these papers to determine whether or not there was a violation of national security. And she stopped that.
Well,
meanwhile,
didn't they just appoint a special master by the name of Raymond Deary this week on Monday, today?
Yeah. So Raymond Deary is a retired senior judge, a FISA court judge, appointed by Ronald Reagan, sitting in the Eastern District of New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to be very interesting how he handles it. It'll be unbelievable.
It's not a tough situation to handle, you know. It's really not complicated. There really should be no special master.
Exactly. So why do we go through that process? Was that to placate Trump?
Because the judge wanted to give Trump a favorable opinion. And she couldn't
because he appointed her
in favor of what he was asking for, which was to get back all his papers and, you know, let's call it a day. So she appointed a special master.
Yeah. And why did it take us so long to recognize that, even though it was recognized from the very beginning, that someone that was appointed by the president should not have responsibility in return, given special privilege on the return, because that's a conflict of interest right then and there, isn't it?
Well, you would think she would recuse herself. I mean, if the president appoints you, and it's a recent appointment, then you would think that the optics aren't really good.
Right. Well, absolutely not. Well, I want you to go on to cover so much more stuff because you're aware of all this. The Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, evidently they closed their borders today to most Russian citizens because they don't want to support Russia's war in Ukraine. Is that going to help in any way, or is that just a visual? And it's good to see a visual anyway to close the borders with Russia because those countries border Russia. They said enough is enough already.
Yeah, I think it's a visual, a good visual, and it also sends a message that Russia, as far as those nations are concerned, should be isolated and should not have access to the rest of Eastern Europe. Unless they act like human beings and not killers. Meanwhile, you have Russia leaving 400, 500, 600 people dead in mass graves who are civilians, not military. So that brings you back to the point of whether they're committing war crimes during their invasion, and it's pretty clear they are.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin, there's got to be a power structure in Russia that has got to be looking at this and saying, number one, our army sucks, and that's not a good look for a strong nation to have. He said, number two, we're killing civilians, and that's not a good look. And number three, we got sanctions all over the place, and that's not a good look. So you would think they'd get rid of him.
It seems that Zelensky is doing a bang-up job in regaining property that was lost to the Russians when they created this war. It's amazing how much territory he's been able to recapture.
It is impressive, isn't
it? And Putin, yeah, it's very impressive. And Putin must look like a real fool before Xi from China, because it seems that Russia has become a weak nothing, I mean, on the world stage. I was always shocked when I used to hear that Russia was on the same level as America from a power structure perspective. And now it's been proven years later that they're just a paper tiger. There's nothing there.
They make nothing.
They may have atom bombs.
They produce nothing.
Warned. Exactly.
But Xi is not the only person.
China. Say that again.
No, and how about India? Modi said the same thing to him. Modi said, now is the time for democracy. It's not the time for war.
Exactly. Wow. It's just amazing. Just amazing.
Dictators have come to a very cruel end. You know?
Yes.
With minor exceptions.
Mm.
Most dictators aren't tolerated forever. Mussolini was hung upside down. Hitler shot himself in the head. You know, other dictators have come to a harsh ending. And particularly when they make mistakes that result in the killing. I think Russia is said to have lost 60 to 80,000 troops. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's more than they lost in Afghanistan by 10 times.
Mm. Well, I'm blown away by how they've fallen apart from a military perspective, which is
amazing. The military was missing non-commissioned officers. They don't have them in the military. They have generals and they have privates, but they don't have anybody in the middle to lead the troops. That's why you saw so many generals getting shot, and that's why the troops have no will to fight, because they've got nobody leading them. They would just as soon go home.
Absolutely. Well, it seems that the United Nations has voted to allow Zelensky to give a virtual speech, and they voted that on Friday. So I guess he's going to be able to give a speech with regard to dealing with Russia's invasion. Is it conceivable that he could put Putin on the spot? I guess so. He's certainly not.
I don't know. When you say put Putin on the spot, I think everybody pretty much knows that Putin made a big mistake. Even Putin probably knows that at this point. So I'm not really sure how he could put him on the spot. He's probably simply going to ask for additional long-range rockets. Because now I think that he's able to reach Russian territory from Ukraine. That's how much territory they've taken back.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so quickly, it's unheard of. I couldn't believe it.
It's like 7 or 8 months, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's a long time. That's a slog.
Evidently, the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, said on Friday she's planning to make a weekend visit to Armenia, where a ceasefire is being held for a second day after, you know, a problem there with Azerbaijan. I didn't realize that she would get so involved, but evidently she has. Why is that?
Well, interestingly enough, the Armenian community in the United States is a very tight community with a lot of money. And
I didn't know that.
They can help swing elections in certain districts where they live. And I'm sure Nancy's quite aware of that because nothing else explains why she would go there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Nothing else is amazing.
Any name
that ends in I-A-N is Armenian.
Uh-huh. I-A-N. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
any name that ends in that. Vardabedian, mm-hmm. You know, I've not a lot of members of the Armenian. They're very nice people, obviously, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they're very active. So,
yeah,
you know, you don't want to cross them. And if you can do something to get their attention for the midterms, you can help your party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I was shocked to read that a few days back, Poland and South Korea sealed a $3 billion military aircraft deal. So they bought 50 fighter planes because they want mm-hmm. they need them in order to increase the deterrence and defense capabilities against Russia.
Uh-huh.
Is everything changing because of Russia's attitude towards Zelensky and Ukraine? Is this a game changer? It seems like it's starting to really affect the world.
Is a nuclear arsenal. Okay, that's it. Now, whether or not that nuclear arsenal is still able to shoot is a whole other issue because they pretty much know, I think it's pretty fair to say, that whatever weapons they had were not kept well. They were not maintained because they're strewn on the battlefield.
Uh-huh. Wow. All right, well, that's going to be very, very interesting to see where all of this stuff unravels. It'll be really fascinating. Well, what else do we have
not
to look at?
Not as fascinating. The January 6th committee
yes.
is going to meet sometime, I think, in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. September is going to be a wild month, and probably October, too, because there are apparently a lot more information. Some of the books that are coming out now are telling the relationship between Trump and disease.
Oh, can you repeat that again? Because you're cutting in and out.
This is not about demanding Trump either. This is about making sure Trump is not president again.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, we'll have to see then where all that goes. That's certainly not hit the news that I was aware of, so evidently you've got, like, extra strong ears that you've heard. So that's really very, very good. What else should we be thinking about on the international stage, and how does that affect the American president? Oh, the American president was in England. He was part of the entourage there, respecting the former queen, which is amazing. I think it was terrific that he went there. It was a big honor, I think. Did we lose you? I hope not. Let's just look. You never can tell. Sometimes these things break down. And we'll see in a moment. I'll recheck. Or maybe at Michael's end, it fell apart. You never can tell. Let me just see. Oh, he's back there. All right, here he is.
Yeah, sorry about that.
There we are. No problem. I understand. Sometimes things happen. So what about the president? I was thrilled that he went to Russia.
I was watching the funeral.
Yeah,
it was 6:30. It was an outage all over here, so anybody watching the Queen couldn't watch it. 6:30
on. It was amazing. So, but I know that he was there. That's what's important. So we'll probably get videos and other things later on, because I'm sure they're going to cause them to make sure that we get them in the United States.
Yeah, well, it was quite,
anything else that's important that I've missed?
I saw it up until the time that the coffin was taken into Westminster, and that the bishops started to speak. But I didn't hear anything after that. Was it? It cut out after that. So I'm sure we'll get snippets of Charles's talk, and I don't know if the kids are going to talk, but we'll see.
Absolutely, we'll see. Anything that I've missed that's important with regard to international as well as national state?
We covered a lot of territory.
We did a tremendous amount of territory. Thanks for your input, because I don't think anybody else could do as good a job as you. I can't even imagine. And I'm not looking for anybody else because you're so lucid. Thank you so much.
All right.
All the best.
Speak to you next week.
Enjoy the – take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Michael Edelman, national political analyst and pundit, and also international political analyst. And I don't know if you know anybody else that has those two accolades to their capacity, and evidently that's not the case otherwise. Well, we're expecting a call from Robert Keston. He's the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, and it's a conglomeration that was founded in 1988 by a woman by the name of Shulamit Koenig. Movement's an independent international nonprofit organization working on human rights globally. And their Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the backbone of their work. It consists of 30 articles beginning with all human beings are born free and equal. And we learned the issues that have long undermined the inculcation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So we expect him to be calling very shortly, and we'll see where that goes. And the final segment will be with me, and we'll try to cover some international as well as local news and see where things go. So hopefully he'll be able to call us up shortly, and we'll see. Wait another few minutes. You never know. He may not be available. And we'll find out very shortly. So one thing that really is interesting as we stay afloat on some other issues, I want you to go over and we'll cover some other news as well. This was important. Family of an American says he was freed by the Taliban in a swap. So that's going to be very interesting. I'm glad that that had taken place. Baltic nations are closing their borders to Russians over the Ukraine war. So it seems that Russia is being, choked off by their neighbors, particularly the Baltic states. And Russia is seeking a closer security tie with China as their key goal. I really question whether Chairman Xi of China is really going to really waste his time with Russia other than to conceivably turn him into a vassal of the Chinese, which would be a huge, huge thing. And it seems that a year on, the volcano scars have marked Spain's La Palma Island. The 6-kilometer black lava scar crossing Spain's La Palma Island remains as testimony to the 3-month-long volcano eruption that may have left no casualties but did wreak havoc in the lives of many. So it's something to think about, and it is absolutely frightening. Mother Nature, she's got us covered. So we just don't know how to do a better job of putting it all together, at least not yet. So we don't have We don't have the power to control any of the stuff that goes on with Mother Nature. I don't know. We may be fooling ourselves, but it's not working. Let me see if I can get this. There it is. Okay, there's our main man, Robert Keston. We're going to bring him in. Good morning, Mr. Keston. How are you, sir?
I am well, and you?
Thank God. Okay, much better than I was before. Went through hospitals, and they put me together again. I don't think I'd be here if it wasn't for New York Presbyterian Hospital. I'm not laughing at them. I'm thankful for them. It's amazing. It's amazing what science can do. So they really worked me over. Thank goodness for that. So I'm here on radio again. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you very much for asking.
Well, I'm thrilled as we're going through a crisis around the world. Is there something that can be said about the conduct of, like, Russia against Ukraine? The world is in an uproar about it. And yet you have a country like Russia that hasn't adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is a growing body of work that certainly resonates with me, but then there are governments that with whom it does not resonate. And what's the difference between them? Is it an autocracy or that sort of process in Russia that makes them, they look the other way. They're scared to death of human rights.
I think that fear of human rights, self-government, all of those kinds of beliefs,
yeah,
make most people in power fearful. We hear many of our own elected officials say that Hungary would be a great example for us to follow. Some of those same people here in the United States have supported Putin in his war on Ukraine.
Yes,
so I think that it's very dangerous to separate us simply by nation or region when there are people everywhere who fall on both sides of these issues. And yes, there are countries that are full into it, like China or Russia or Turkey or the Philippines,
yeah,
or Brazil. There are fewer that propose to be democracies, but in more and more of those countries, we see growing right-wing movements or extremist movements on one,
yes,
side or the other. And so democracy is in a fragile state right now. And we are seeing places like Florida where democracy doesn't really even exist anymore. The governor has come in and replaced school boards and replaced attorney generals or district attorneys, people who were elected by the people. The governor has come in and replaced because he does not like them.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to that, the governor in Florida has passed laws that allow for him or his party to appoint common citizens to go in and inspect ballots and determine if the signatures match or match closely enough to be included. So this coming election makes clear that democracy as we've known it no longer exists, at least in one state of the 50 states. We also know that people are being elected or appointed throughout the United States that still believe that the election was stolen.
Yeah,
those people
do.
Will be determining the future options in those states and regions. So if the United States has a fragile democracy, we can only wonder how strong they will be in other parts of the world, including Estonia and Latvia and other parts of the world where,
right,
democracy is still new and fresh and a work in progress.
Is there something that, in a sense, would resuscitate the view or the perspective of countries where, you know, the whole idea of human rights and democracy are anathema to them because they've lived under a different yoke before, but they're discovering something else. What are they searching for? Are they also for dignity within their own society? Oh, and I should tell people, in case they're listening, that the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, you could find out about them at a website address, which is P like Peter, D like David, H like Hotel, R like Robert, E like Edward, .org. So PDHRE.org. So where do we go from here, and how do we engender a greater understanding of human rights?
The only way to engender a greater understanding is for people to know them. Unfortunately, that's the only – it's a simple solution, but it's a difficult solution because people don't believe that they have much time to do anything other than survive and protect what is theirs. And certainly
we're
everybody –
we're lucky in America because we do have a little bit more time, it seems.
I don't know. I think that you live in a Northeast bubble that may convince you of that. I don't know if the rest of America feels that way.
No, you're right. I think I probably do live in a Northeast bubble. It just seems that, I don't know, we may be more aware than they are out in the Midwest, but who knows?
Well, I've not lived out in the Midwest. Once again, one has to be careful with the words one picks, and we may be more aware. They would say you're less aware, and that's why you're following this foolish way of thinking. We need to get things to the lowest common denominator so we can find common ground.
That's a very valid point. So how do we get to that common ground when we believe in different things or different concepts or different standards in different parts of the nation?
And that's why we have to determine what is it that everybody wants. And certainly everybody wants to be treated with dignity, but not everybody understands or cares that the only way you will be treated with dignity is if you treat others with the same respect. So we have people who actually vote on what they call the culture wars rather than what is in their own best interest.
Really?
When you're voting on culture war issues, you're voting against someone else. You're voting against their right to dignity. You're voting against their right to freedom. You're voting against their right to justice. That also means that you're...
Why the animosity towards some other group? We don't like gays, we don't like blacks, we don't like Hispanics, we don't, you know, as a nation, we're separate and apart. I don't know why.
Because it makes us feel better about ourselves. It makes us feel that we are taking the aggressive tact and protecting our self-interest. If you're told over and over again that immigrants are going to take your job, immigrants are bringing in crime, immigrants are rapists and drug dealers, then you fear immigrants. You don't remember that you yourself were an immigrant only a generation or two ago. You don't remember that this is a nation that success was built on immigration. So when you don't know history, when you don't know facts, when you don't know what comprises the American dream, you find it very, very easy to go to other people and vote against their ability to participate in a free system. You believe that you're protecting your role, but what you're really doing is laying the groundwork for yourself to be undermined in the future. But those are concepts that are difficult for people to understand. It's very much like if you go back to the 1930s and 1940s, Hitler used the Slavs, the Poles, the Ukrainians, and others to carry out some of the worst crimes against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
They did not realize, they did not believe, they did not understand that they were on the Nazis' list of people to be destroyed after Jews and Gypsies and a few handful of others were wiped
right.
off the face of the earth. So here they were
right.
making it so that nobody would ever stand up for them. Nobody would ever protect them because they didn't believe that after they did such a good job for the Third Reich, that the Third Reich would come for them.
Mm.
And that's what we have here in the United States, and we have every other place around the world. We have people who believe that they are essential because of their loyalty. They are essential because of their committedness to supporting the hate and the separations and the divisions. They don't realize that those they are supporting, those they are bowing their heads to, have absolutely no respect for them and that they are next.
Wow. So how do people learn that lesson? They should have been able to recognize it from World War II, but evidently that didn't impact people. And we have the same crisis now. Now we talk against Hispanics. Now we talk against blacks. Seems America wants to be only white. It just doesn't cut it. It doesn't. And what is it that people do that are not like us, whoever they are and whoever we are, that offends us so? Are we afraid we won't be able to get employment? Are we not smart enough? I don't understand it.
It's not that we're not smart enough.
I never learned that. I never learned this sort of bias. My parents never did.
You do right, but you do realize that you're an exception to the rule.
I do realize that, yes. But I don't understand.
Right.
Considering where my parents came from, I don't know even how they learned any of this stuff. Really, I just don't get it.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe, but look at came here fleeing oppression. So you've got Cubans, you've got Iranian Jews and Iranians,
mm-hmm.
you've got Venezuelans, you've got many other people. They enjoyed, and I emphasize the word enjoyed, living under autocracies. The Iranians who came here were fine under the Shah. The Cubans who came here were fine under Batista.
Yep.
They weren't looking to flee for democracy. They were not looking to flee from oppression as long as they were not the ones being oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
They came here when those tyrannies were overthrown. Now, they weren't necessarily overthrown by better governments, but they were overthrown by different governments, governments that no longer respected their right to be part of the ruling class. And then look who they support here when they come here. They support the very same kind of people whose governments they prospered under in their homeland. So they're not here to support American democracy. They're not here to support freedom for all or voting rights for all or economic opportunity for all. They are supporting the very same kind of strongmen in this country who would do away with American-style democracy, who would do away with electoral freedoms that they had in their native lands when they were at the top of the heap.
Well,
that
you know,
is something that I never hear.
Your verbalizing that really makes an unbelievable impact because I knew that subliminally, but I really never verbalized it, but that is exactly the truth. I see it all the time.
And that is
and
one
I don't
of
know
the
how
big dangers.
That.
It is one of the big dangers that we face right now, that these
yeah.
minority communities that came here ostensibly for freedom are only looking to return to the strong man style government that they
yeah.
were forced to surrender in their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranian Jews and the Iranians that have come here.
Left?
Pardon?
Do they remember why they left that, their country, wherever that country is, and came to America? Why did they come here?
They came here because their strong men were overthrown and other strong men replaced them.
Uh-huh, and they weren't secure anymore.
Exactly. So when the Shah fell, and the Shah was certainly a tyrant, Islamists came in. They were no longer persona gratis. So they
yeah.
fled. And they claimed to be fleeing for political reasons. But they were really fleeing primarily for economic reasons. They
yeah.
wanted to build their empires in a place that would allow them to build their empires and give them access to the political process. And now they're trying
mm-hmm.
to overthrow our government to replace it with a strongman-style government, which will once again protect them, or so they believe.
Does America get that? That seems
no.
like so far-fetched for most Americans. You don't get it.
No, people say, look, the Cubans are supporting this one, so, and they came here for democracy. They did not come here for democracy.
Yeah.
They came here to escape Castro. They did
yeah.
not come here to who was a dictator.
Yeah.
The Iranians who have come here did not come here for democracy because they were happy under the Shah. They came here when the mullahs took over, when the ayatollahs
mm-hmm.
took over, because then they felt that their way of life was threatened.
Yeah.
None of them came here for democracy. None of them came here for political freedom. They came here for economic reasons. But they
is
were given political asylum.
So is that the magnet of America, financial prosperity?
It is for a lot of people who were all too
mm-hmm.
happy to live under dictatorships in their homelands.
Yeah. Yeah, unbelievable. How is it that we're not being able to teach this to the American population?
Well,
why
the other question
we get
is,
it?
But the other question is, why after generations or a generation or two generations or four generations of people living here, have they not found that protecting American democracy is more important than just about anything else? Why do these people and their ancestors continue to fight against American democracy and in favor of strongman-style government
mm-hmm.
that will destroy our democracy and destroy the very foundations that gave them opportunity when they came to the United States? Where
I
is
get
that?
It, myself. It doesn't make sense to me. You would think that if you come to America, I didn't come to America because I wanted to run away from my homeland. My relatives moved here, and at the end, I was the last one, you know, in the old country. So I came over here to be with family. And now I even see that they're removed from different concepts and they lost what I remember when I was growing up. So I don't know, what will it take for people to get it together? What will it take for people to respect others as we want to respect ourselves and that we expect others to respect us? Or is that just, it's like you embody that. I hope I embody that, but maybe not as in a sophisticated plane as you, because you're ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned, in a brilliant way. So how do we get more people to, not to copy, but to emulate, is a better word, to emulate your thinking?
It is, as I said, it's both simple and difficult at the same time.
And complex, yeah.
Because it's not that it's so complex. I mean, I think that it's somewhat easy to understand. People are scared. And when people are scared, people react in ways that are often nonsensical. But what makes it difficult is letting go of the fear and being courageous. And it is courageous to let go of fear because fear protects you. Fear makes you feel guarded and stronger because you have something to be angry about. It's like we just talked about before. Voting along the lines of the culture wars is voting against other people. It's not voting for something.
Right.
By voting to oppress someone else, by voting to take away the rights of someone else, you are not voting for something that's good for you or good for your community. You're voting against others.
Yeah.
If you vote on economic policies, if you vote on better education, if you vote to improve health care, you're voting on policies that would benefit you. But when you vote to take away the rights of women, or take away the rights of trans people, or take away the rights of minorities, that may be culture wars, but it doesn't benefit you. It hurts someone else, but it makes you feel superior. That's not courage. That's cowardice.
No, is that the reason why people have this resentment towards trans people? Why does it matter if they are able to live a better life?
It doesn't
and
matter. What matters
who
is
they are.
What matters is that there are culture warriors out there that are using people who are fearful to convince them that this is a danger. It is against your religion. It is against our society. It is against this. What they're really saying is, don't pay attention to your pocketbook. Attention to your health care. Don't pay attention to your children or grandchildren's education. This is the issue that you have to focus on, making sure that those people are never equal to you because you're better than them. And when we vote that way, when we think that way, we hurt ourselves, and it's very difficult to recover from. That's called scapegoating. We all know that scapegoating is a bad thing. It hurts our society. It brings us down to a level that we should never succumb to. But that's what we are doing now. And the people behind it are people who divide in order to get power. They are not uniters. They are not people who believe in human rights. They are people who believe that power is theirs, and they will do whatever it takes to get it. And so you've got the DeSantis's, you've got the Abbott's, you've got the Trumps, you've got all of those people lined up, willing to divide and conquer in any way possible because power should belong to them. They have a right to it. And nobody else. And they don't care what they say. They don't care who they hurt. And then you have the others, the Nelson Mandelas, who believed in uniting people. But the uniters you can count on one hand. The dividers you can't count on the hands of millions of people because that is the simple way, the easiest way to gain power is to divide, scapegoat, and conquer. And so now we are in a world where we're taking the easy way out. And we're allowing people to use that easy way out in order to align themselves with who they believe will be the power brokers so that they will remain in power and they don't care who they sell out along the way, as long as they don't get sold out themselves.
But they don't realize that if they've sold other people out, that they could be sold in turn, maybe not this year, but maybe next year?
Almost everybody believes that they will make it through. They don't believe that you will, but they believe that they will. It's sort of like an adolescent. You know, kids will jump off roofs of buildings because they don't believe that they can really get hurt. Kids will drag race down a two-way street believing that a car will not show up over the horizon and meet them head on. Because they're young. They believe that everything is in front of them. They believe that there is no obstacle that they can't conquer.
Right.
And that carries through with the people who then divide and conquer, those who go with the divider rather than the healer, those who believe that they will miraculously survive because they will be undaunted in their quest. So no, they do not believe, just like in Germany, just like in Rome, just like in every tradition and historical story that's ever been told. There are those who will side with the victor and gladly punish the loser because they want to be ingratiated with the winners, those who will write history.
Do we see that now in China, mainland China, as opposed to the island of Formosa, where same people, different lifestyles because they're different governments? And do they know?
Well, first off, they're not the
China,
same people.
The way
they
live
not,
on the island
but
of Taiwan?
They're not the same people.
No longer.
They've
changed.
The native or aboriginal or first people of Taiwan were not Chinese.
Oh, I didn't know
Chinese
that.
Chinese went to Taiwan to escape the communists, and they definitely are in the leading position in Taiwan because they went in such big numbers. But the indigenous people still live there and still prosper and still have their own communities and are a wonderful group of people. So Taiwan is Chinese by escape from the communists, but it's not totally indigenous Chinese people. With countries that have grown from nothing and countries that have declared themselves free all over the planet, some getting smaller and smaller and smaller, it's hard to understand why China thinks that in this instance they have a right when in other places they have sided with separatists. Again, it's convenient for them.
So how is it that Taiwan, which had a large influx of Chinese, I guess that was the closest that Chiang Kai-shek could get to the mainland China, did they eviscerate the power of the people who were indigenous there? Or
of course.
Is it now one nation?
Well, they're one nation, but the indigenous
people
there are not. They're considered a minority. They're considered, very much like Native Americans and other populations where a population was already there and population that wanted to be in charge comes in and takes over.
Well, that's interesting. You bring up again Native Americans, and I don't understand what the animosity is toward them.
Animosity is that they remind us that someone was here first.
That's the animosity? Really? That's where it comes from?
That's part of it.
Oh, my God.
You can't say that this land is our land, this land is your land, and then see people who were on the land when you got here. You know, we still say Lewis and Clark discovered the Northwest. Well, they didn't actually discover it. They mapped it, maybe.
They found it.
They drew, but they didn't find it. They weren't the first people there.
No.
Yeah, we discovered the new land. Well, what does that mean? You discovered it as a European, but you didn't discover it. It was already discovered, and it was already lived on.
Mm-hmm.
It was here. And so were people still claim to discover. And that means discovering for ourselves, not discovering for the people who already reside there. So we use words in ways that make us feel that we are the important ones. We are the worthy ones. Nothing exists until we see it, until we claim it. And unfortunately, that then sends messages going way into the future of things that are not true.
Mm-hmm. So that's our big lie. Because we're lying to ourselves, we're deceiving ourselves in the process. So who's enlightened? Is there anybody who's enlightened?
Pardon?
Is anyone enlightened with reality?
Of course there are people and individuals and small groups.
Yeah.
Look, we use this stuff to our own advantage, and sometimes it's for good, and all too often it's not. But just think, our whole system of government, our whole societal view of ourselves in the United States is based on the fact that George Washington cut down a cherry tree and then told his father, I did it, I cannot tell a lie.
Yeah.
We know that's a made-up story. It's fiction. But yet everything after that is based on the vision of a man who could not tell a lie as the founding father of the United States of America. Not that he was a human being who had foibles, who owned slaves, who made mistakes.
Right.
But that he was a man who could not tell a lie even about the simple chopping down of a cherry tree.
Mm-hmm.
When your entire premise is based on that, then everything is built on sand. Things are built on solid ground. And George Washington, in reality, was a special individual. He didn't want to be king. He was willing to relinquish power, not once, but multiple times.
Yeah.
That's what made George Washington special, not that he chopped down a fictitious cherry tree. So we have something that we could have built a real story on, but instead, we built it on a fable. And that creates a false sense of who we are as a nation. And that creates a false sense of where we're going and what we need to aspire to going forward. And that carries through in our foreign policy. That carries through in our domestic policy. And that carries through in the way we treat each other.
Frightening. So are we moving towards a better reality, a better understanding of one another, an appreciation of one another, or we're still living in fear?
We're still living in fear. That doesn't mean that won't move. We won't move in a positive direction, but first it looks like, once again, we're going to have to go through a very bad time. It doesn't mean that it's guaranteed. But we will know more as we approach the election. Will this be a fair and honest election? Or will indeed this be the time when elections are stolen left and right by people who do not want democracy? We will know soon.
I never thought we would revisit that, but that's fascinating. But you think we might?
Well, the handwriting right now is on the wall. The laws have been put in place. Election officials are being put in place in certain states. There are states already where democracy is tenuous at best, Florida being the third largest state in the union where democracy may not exist anymore, certainly democracy as we know it. So I don't think that it's just supposition or wondering. It's just how far can it go before people take to the streets? And will people take to the streets now, or will people wait until worse things happen and they can no longer ignore what's going on? You know, women by themselves maybe could stop it, but there are not enough women willing to stand up. The LGBTQ community by itself might not be able to stop it, but in alliances with women, alliances with other groups, Jews, blacks, Hispanics, maybe it's possible. But Hispanics are divided, you know, as we discussed.
Yeah.
Cubans and Venezuelans are happy for single man rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where they felt protected in their own countries. They didn't want. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, finish your thought.
Well, they didn't want democracy in their homelands, and they don't want democracy here.
What I've always wondered is, just a little bit over 50% of the population are women. And it's like, I've never controlled a woman. I don't know if a woman's controlled me, but certainly you have a relationship with people. And why is it that women haven't found their power?
Because women are not a monolith. There are women who believe that they are subservient to their husbands. There are women who believe that they are not equal. There are women who don't trust other women. Why? Because women are people, and people are like that.
Well, there are men who don't feel secure.
That's right.
But less men feel insecure than women who feel insecure.
It's not that there's less men that feel that way. It's that men have operated out in the world. So they
Because of their work and their capacity to earn a living has been greater because they've been given the opportunity to do so.
Correct. Right, but they've also treated themselves based on where they believe they fit in society. So you have men that cower in the face of other men. Just to use a more recent example, look how the people who worked for Donald Trump treated Donald Trump.
Yes.
They feared him enough that they never stood up to him, no matter what he asked them to do. So
now
imagine that 10 times over for women in the Trump organization, with the exception of Ivanka.
Yeah.
You know, they knew where they stood, and they knew that if they wanted to make money, if they wanted to have a chance at a job, that they had to cater to this egomaniac.
Mm-hmm.
So people know where they stand. And if you are going to fight for your dignity, you know that you may be giving something else up. And are you willing to do that?
If you fight for your dignity as a woman, what do you give up?
Still give up your chance to make a paycheck. You still give up your chance to have housing. You still give up your chance to get medical care and insurance. So it's giving up a lot if you stand up and you put your head above the
water. Women are afraid, for example, to ask for their rights to have an abortion. So that's why.
There are many who are.
Uh-huh.
We know that a majority of women believe in choice.
Yes. But they don't feel strong enough to be able to pass it through.
That is true.
So does this equation ever stop, or is this a continuing process and maybe the actors change from either or powerless?
The actors change, and we do make progress over time, but we always seem to have these points in history where we take steps backwards, sometimes giant steps, sometimes multiple steps, and that's where we are. And unfortunately, we're not going to change that in this conversation. But no. Hopefully people will listen, and hopefully people will decide that it's never a bad time to move forward, and it is almost always a bad time to step backwards, because we can never go back. We can never go back. And when we try to go back, we make things worse. So we have to find our way forward, our way to be more inclusive. We have to find our way to expand personal freedom, political freedom, not eliminate it for some while we believe that we're enhancing it for others, because that's just false. And I know that our time is up, so I want to thank you.
Yes.
And I look forward to speaking to you in 2 weeks.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm sorry I went over time. I was
That's
captivated.
Okay.
All the best. Have a great
Thank
week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye. Oh, my goodness. What a breathtaking conversation. It just doesn't get better than this. So I hope you've all been captivated for sure. And we just spoke with Robert Keston. He's the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning. You could learn more about him at the website D like Peter, D like David, H like Hotel, R Robert E Edward .org. So PD.org. It was founded back in 1988 by Shulamit Koenig, it's a worthwhile read. I think you'll enjoy it. And it's a declaration of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the backbone of their work. And there consists of about 30 articles, beginning with "All human beings are born free and equal." Just breathtaking work. So that's really terrific. Now, let's look at some other stuff that you might find interesting. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. I want to cover this with you. Question is, why Vladimir Putin's new Russian pivot to Asia will likely fail? The Russian president's pivot to Asia looks shaky after India and China gave him a subtle cold shoulder. At a recent conference, Southeast Asian countries are wary of a Western backlash if they cooperate with Moscow. It's like what we were talking about now. Speaking in early September at the Eastern Economic Forum, Russian President Vladimir Putin recommitted to decoupling his country's economy from European Union states that have imposed hefty sanctions on Russia. The same European Union nations have been trying to disentangle their energy policies from Moscow since the invasion of Ukraine in February, and instead bolster ties with Asia. The role of the countries of the Asia-Pacific region has significantly increased, Putin said at the forum held in Russia's Pacific port city of Vladivostok, adding that Asia holds, quote, colossal new opportunities for our people, end quote. Russia's newly updated naval doctrine, published on August 31st, also aims to boost its military presence in the East. Russia's economy has been badly hit by international sanctions imposed earlier this year, even though the government reckons that it will only contract by 3% in 2022. It is both a geopolitical necessity and a genuine desire to position Russia as a source of energy, resources, defense equipment, and in some cases, nuclear technologies for the growing Asian economy, said Philip Ivanov, the chief executive officer of Asia Society Australia, which is a think tank. Now, analysts have suggested that Putin's latest pivot will be just as unsuccessful as the 2012 tilt toward Asia, dubbed Moscow's turn to the East policy. Quote, I would say another failure, since again, Russia doesn't have a lot to offer the region strategically or economically, said Joshua Kulanchik. He's a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said that Moscow needed to, quote, move into a path of peace, end quote, after attending a regional summit with Putin in Uzbekistan last week. And Putin has publicly acknowledged that Chinese President Xi Jinping had, quote, questions and concerns, end quote, about the war. Commentators reckon that Moscow has made it itself an even more, quote, junior partner, end quote, of Beijing's since its invasion of Ukraine. Russia's Asia pivot has boasted few achievements since 2012. Bilateral trade with Japan peaked at $33.2 billion in 2013, but dwindled to just $20.8 billion in 2021. That's a disaster. Trade with South Korea rose to $27.3 billion in 2021, yet Russia accounts for just a little over 2% of South Korea's total trade. And both Western-leaning Asian states have aggressively committed to Western sanctions denting their trade with Russia this year. Singapore imposed its own unilateral sanctions on Russia because of the Ukraine invasion, the only Southeast Asia country to do so. And under the first pivot, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, A-S-E-A-N, upgraded its ties with Russia as a, quote, strategic partnership, end quote, in 2018, yet 4 years after Russia annexed Crimea, part of Ukraine, yet ASEAN-Russia trade grew to only about $20 billion in 2021, up from $18.2 billion in 2012. That pales in comparison with ASEAN's trade with China, $878 billion, and the United States, $441.7 billion in 2021. ASEAN's trade with Taiwan is worth almost four times as much as with Russia. Go figure. Though most Southeast Asian countries have tried to remain neutral on the Ukraine war, even Russia's traditional friends have become standoffish. Since 1990, Russia has been the main provider of military equipment to the region, according to data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI. In August, the Philippines canceled a contract to purchase 16 Russian military helicopters, purportedly under pressure from the United States. And Vietnam, which bought four-fifths of its military equipment from Russia between 1995 and 2021, is concerned that it could fall foul of the United States' countering America's adversaries through Sanctions Act, AATSA, which threatens sanctions against any country that buys weapons from Russia. Major Asian importers of Russian military goods were already turning away from the Ukraine war, or before the Ukraine war, and Russian arms exports to India and Vietnam fell 47% and 71% respectively between the 2012 to 2016 and 2017 to 2021 periods, according to a recent SIPRI report. An exception is the military junta that now controls limited areas of Myanmar. Russia has been the main international benefactor of the junta since its coup in February 2021, providing arms, aid, and cheap energy. Myanmar's junta has embraced Putin's regime with open arms as a partner to avoid overdependence on Beijing. But the alliance rests on mutual desperation and shared authoritarian political systems, said Hunter Marston, a researcher and analyst at the Australian National University in Canberra. If either Min Aung Hlaing, the junta or the junta leader, or Putin were to lose his hold on power, Myanmar-Russia ties would likely suffer a major setback, Marston said. So the relationship is not sustainable at this point, quote unquote. And according to Frederick Kleen, a research fellow and lecturer at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore, no ASEAN ASEAN member, quote, sees their economic future with Russia, except Myanmar, under the junta. However, one area where Russia could win some friends is in energy cooperation, he added. Many Asian countries are debating whether to pursue nuclear power generation at the same time as investment in their renewable energy sectors is booming. In July, Indonesia's government said it was mulling a Russian offer to develop a nuclear power plant. The same month, Nova Wind, a subsidiary of Russian energy giant Rosatom, signed a deal with Vietnam to develop a 128-megawatt wind farm, its first overseas project. Now, Asian imports of Russian liquefied natural gas, LNG, have increased since the Ukraine war began. Japan's imports grew by 211% in August compared to the same month last year, for instance. The government of Indonesia, not a usual importer of Russian gas, said this week it is considering offset soaring energy costs. But analysts doubt whether this is a long-term strategy for Russia, since many Asian countries have only increased their imports of Russia's gas because of its historically low price due to Western sanctions. And those rates might not remain so low for long, though. And because of spiraling inflation, fears of food insecurity and higher costs of living, Asian governments are anxious for an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, said Shada Islam, an independent analyst on Europe and Asia relations. Quote, this does not mean, however, that governments and people in the region have any illusion about the real geostrategic reason behind Putin's renewed courtship of Asia as he searches for allies in his battle with the West, she added. Most Asian countries have learned the hard way they're clear of being used as pawns of so-called great powers in the geopolitical chessboard. Russia's latest pivot to Asia is not going to be any more successful than its last lackluster attempt to up its game in the region. So there you have it. One second. And this is very interesting. Putin has advised India's Modi he wants the Ukraine conflict to end, quote, as soon as possible. During a meeting with India's Narendra Modi on the sidelines of the Uzbekistan Security Summit, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he wanted to end the Ukraine conflict, quote, as soon as possible without saying how. Russian President Vladimir Putin told Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Friday during a meeting on the sidelines of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit that he wanted to end the conflict of Ukraine, quote, as soon as possible, end quote, and understood that India had, quote, concerns, quote, end quote, about the fighting. I know your position on the conflict in Ukraine, your concerns. We will do our best to end this as soon as possible, Putin was reported as telling Modi during the bilateral talks. Later on Friday, Putin held bilateral talks with Turkish President Erdogan, who has similarly urged Putin to end the war in Ukraine, quote, as soon as possible, end quote, through diplomacy. In his prior talks with Modi, Putin claimed that it was Kyiv that insisted on fighting, not Moscow. Putin and Erdogan addressed a number of issues stemming from the Ukraine conflict, among them grain exports, which Putin said he hopes will go to the world's poorest countries, and gas supplies to Turkey, 25% of which will be paid in rubles, according to an agreement the Russian strongman had said would soon come into force. Putin also spoke with Azerbaijan's President Ilham Aliyev in Shanghai. Aliyev informed Putin that a flare-up in fighting between his country and Armenia had stabilized, with a ceasefire now in its second day. Russia's Putin said he welcomed news of de-escalation while noting that the situation remained tense. Erdogan is pressing for war in Ukraine to end as soon as possible. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said during one of the joint sessions on Friday that he wanted the war in Ukraine to end as soon as possible, end quote, while his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin was in attendance. Turkish president has been seeking to convince Putin of holding direct ceasefire talks with his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky, in Turkey. Erdogan added that he was making diplomatic efforts to end the war at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's security summit. Quote, we are making efforts to finalize the conflict in Ukraine through diplomacy as soon as possible, Erdogan had said. He voiced concerns that grain shipped out of Ukraine was not reaching enough developing countries, especially in Africa, and Putin had expressed similar worries earlier on. Quote, we are making sincere efforts to deliver the grain to those who need it most, especially our brothers and sisters in Africa, Erdogan had said. Well, the Turkish president was set to hold bilateral talks with Putin on the sidelines of the Samarkand summit later on Friday. And Turkey, which is a NATO member, has been delivering weapons and ammunition to Ukraine while trying to increase trade with Russia. For Erdogan, this resembles a balanced, quote-unquote, position that is necessary due to Turkey's stark dependence on Russian energy supplies. Well, Xi meets Erdogan. Earlier on Friday, Chinese President Xi Jinping met with Erdogan. The Chinese leader urged for political mutual trust, quote-unquote, between Russia and Turkey. And according to Chinese state broadcaster CCTV, Xi said, quote, the two sides should consolidate political mutual trust, respect each other's core interests, and consolidate the political foundation of China-Turkey's strategic cooperation relations. We should focus on development cooperation and give full play to the role of various cooperation mechanisms and respective strengths between the two countries, he was quoted as saying. Chinese relationships with Turkey, however, have been tainted by China's alleged human rights violations against the Uyghurs, who are a Turkic-speaking Muslim minority in China's northwest Xinjiang region. So that's all the time we have today. I want to thank you for being with us and, of course, our guests. Mr. Keston and Mr. Edelman and Mr. Bailey. And that's our day. We'll speak to you tomorrow. All the best, folks. And thank you again for being with us. Goodbye. Ugh.